After a long, long break, we're finally continuing Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix.
Bolstered by Barbara.
So we're feeling very confident because we just watched Barbara do her thing as Mrs. Dolly Levi. Soon to be Mrs. Horace Vandegelder. So this is chapter 34, The Department of Mysteries. Harry wound his hand tightly into the mane of the nearest thestral, placed a foot on a stump nearby, and scrambled clumsily onto the horse's silken back. It did not object, but twisted its head around, fangs bared, and attempted to continue its eager licking of his robes. He found there was a way of lodging his knees behind the wing joints that made him feel more secure, and looked around at the others. Neville heaved himself over the back of the next thestral, and was now attempting to swing one short leg over the creature's back. Luna was already in place, sitting saddle-side, and adjusting her robes as though she did this every day. Ron, Hermione, and Ginny, however, were still standing motionless on the spot, open-mouthed and staring. "What?" he said. "How are we supposed to get on?" said Ron faintly. "When we can't see the things." "Oh, it's easy," said Luna, sliding obligingly from her thestral and marching over to him. "Come here." She pulled them over to the other thestrals, standing around, and one by one managed to help them onto the backs of their mounts. All three looked extremely nervous as she wound their hands onto the horses' manes and told them to grip tightly before getting back onto her own steed. "This is mad," Ron said faintly, moving his free hand gingerly up and down the horse's neck. "Mad! If I could just see it!" "You better hope it stays invisible," said Harry darkly. "We all ready, then?" They all nodded, and he saw five pairs of knees tighten beneath their robes. "Okay." He looked down at the back of the thestral's glossy black head and swallowed. Ministry of Magic, Visitor's Entrance, London, then," he said uncertainly. "Or, if you know where to go." For a moment, his thestral did nothing. Then, with a sweeping movement that nearly unseated him, the wings on either side extended. The horse crouched slowly and then rocketed upward so fast and so steeply that Harry had to clench his arms and legs tightly around the horse to avoid sliding backward over its bony rump. He closed his eyes and put his face down in the horse's silky mane as they burst through the topmost branches of the trees and soared out into a blood-red sunset. Harry didn't think he had ever moved so fast. The thestral streaked over the castle, its wide wings hardly beating. The cooling air was slapping Harry's face. Eyes screwed up against the rushing winds, he looked out and saw his five fellows soaring along behind him, each of them bent as low as possible into the neck of the thestral to protect themselves from its slipstream. They were over the Hogwarts grounds. They had passed Hogsmeade. Harry could see mountains and gullies below them. In the darkness, Harry saw small collections of lights as they passed over more villages, and then a winding road on which a single car was beetling its way home through the hills. "This is bizarre," Harry heard Ron yell from somewhere behind him, and he imagined how it must feel to be speeding along at this height with no visible means of support. Twilight fell. The sky turned to a light, dusky purple, littered with tiny silver stars, and soon it was only the lights of Muggle towns that gave them any clues to how far from the ground they were, or how very fast they were traveling. Harry's arms were wrapped tightly around his horse's neck as he willed it to go even faster. How much time had elapsed since he had seen Sirius lying on the Department of Mysteries floor? How much longer would he be able to resist Voldemort? All Harry knew for sure was that Sirius had neither done as Voldemort wanted, nor died, for he was convinced that either the outcome would cause him to feel Voldemort's jubilation or fury course through his own body, making his scar sear as painfully as it had the night Mr. Weasley was attacked. On they flew through the gathering darkness. Harry's face felt stiff and cold, his legs numb from gripping the thestral's sides so tightly, but he did not dare shift positions, lest he slip. He was deaf from the thundering in his ears, and his mouth was dry and frozen from the rush of cold night air. He had lost all sense of how far they had come. All his faith was in the beast below him, still streaking purposefully through the night, barely flapping its wings as it sped ever onward. If they were too late. He's still alive. He's still fighting. I can feel it. If Voldemort decided Sirius was not going to crack, I'd know. Harry's stomach gave a jolt. The Thestral's head was suddenly pointing toward the ground, and he had actually slid forward a few inches along his neck. They were descending at last. He heard one of the girls shriek behind him and twisted along dangerously, but could see no sign of a falling body. Perhaps they had received a shock from the change of positions, just as he had. And now bright orange lights were growing larger and rounder on all sides. They could see the tops of buildings, streams of headlights, like luminous insect eyes, squares of pale yellow that were windows. Quite suddenly, it seemed, they were hurtling toward the pavement. Harry gripped his Thestral with every last ounce of his strength, braced for a sudden impact, but the horse touched the dark ground as lightly as a shadow, and Harry slid from his back, looking around at the street where the overflowing dumpster stood still stood a short way from the vandalized telephone box, both drained of color in the flat orange glare of the streetlights. Ron landed a short way away and toppled immediately off his Thestral onto the pavement. "Never again," he said, struggling to his feet. He made as though to stride away from his Thestral, but, unable to see it, collided with its hindquarters and almost fell over again. "Never, ever again. That was the worst." Hermione and Ginny touched down on either side of him. Both slid off their mounts a little more gracefully than Ron, though with similar expressions of relief at being back on firm ground. Neville jumped down, shaking, but Luna dismounted smoothly. "Where do we go from here, then?" she asked Harry, in a politely interested voice, as though this was all a rather interesting day trip. "Over here," he said. He gave his Thestral a quick, grateful pat, and then led the way quickly to the battered telephone box and opened the door. "Come on," he urged the others as they hesitated. Ron and Ginny marched in obediently. Hermione, Neville, and Luna squashed themselves in after. Harry took one glance back at the Thestrals, now foraging for scraps of rotten food inside the dumpster, and then forced himself into the box after Luna. Whoever's nearest the receiver, dial 62442, he said. Ron did it, his arm bizarrely bent to reach the dial. As it whirred back into the place, the cool female voice sounded inside the box. "Welcome to the Ministry of Magic. Please state your name and business." "Harry Potter, Ron Weasley, Hermione Granger," Harry said very quickly. "Ginny Weasley, Neville Longbottom, Luna Lovegood. We're here to save someone, unless your ministry can do it first." "Thank you," said the cool female voice. "Visitors, please take your badges and attach them to the front of your robes." Half a dozen badges slid out of the metal chute where returned coins usually appeared. Hermione scooped them up and handed them mutely to Harry over Ginny's head. He glanced at the topmost. "Harry Potter Rescue Mission," it said. "Visitor to the Ministry, you are required to submit to a search and present your wand for registration at the security desk, which is located at the far end of the atrium." "Fine," Harry said loudly, as his scar gave another throb. "Now can we move?" The floor of the telephone box shuddered, and the pavement rose up past the glass windows of the telephone box. The scavenging Thestrals were sliding out of sight. Blackness closed over their heads, and with a dull grinding noise, they sank down into the depths of the Ministry of Magic. A chink of soft golden light hit their feet, and widening rose up their bodies. Harry bent his knees and held his wand at ready, as he could in cramped conditions, peering through the glass to see whether anybody was waiting for him in the atrium, but it seemed to be completely empty. The light was dimmer than it had been by day. There were no fires burning under the mantelpieces set into the walls, but he saw, as the lift slid smoothly to a halt, that golden symbols continued to twist sinuously through the dark blue ceiling. "The Ministry of Magic wishes you a pleasant evening," said the woman's voice. The front of the telephone box burst open. Harry toppled out of it, followed by Neville and Luna. The only sound in the atrium was a steady rush of water from the golden fountain, where jets from the wands of the witch and wizard, the point of the centaur's arrow, the tip of the goblin's hat, and the house elf's ears continued to gush into the surrounding pool. "Come on," Harry said quietly, and the six of them sprinted off down the hall, Harry in the lead, past the fountain, toward the desk where the security man who had weighed Harry's wand had sat, which was now deserted. Harry felt that there ought to have been a security person there, and that their absence was an ominous sign, and his feeling of foreboding increased as they passed through the golden gates to the lifts. He pressed the nearest down button, and a lift clattered into sight almost immediately. The golden grills slid apart with a great echoing clanking, and they dashed inside. Harry stabbed the number 9 button. The grills closed with a bang, and the lift began to descend, jangling and rattling. Harry had not realized how noisy the lifts were on the day that he had come with Mr. Weasley. He was sure that the din would raise every security person within the building, yet when the lift halted, the cool female voice said, "Department of Mysteries," and the grills slid open again. They stepped out into the corridor where nothing was moving but the nearest torches, flickering in the rush of air from the lift. Harry turned toward the plain black door. After months and months of dreaming about it, he was here at last. "Let's go," he whispered, and he led the way down the corridor. Luna, right behind him, gazing around with her mouth slightly open. "Okay, listen," Harry said, stopping again within 6 feet of a door. Maybe a couple people should stay here as a lookout. And how are we going to let you know when something's coming?" said Ginny, her eyebrows raised. "You could be miles away." "We're coming with you, Harry," said Neville. "Let's get on with it," said Ron firmly. Harry still did not want to take them all with him, but it seemed he had no choice. He turned to face the door and walked forward. Just as it had in his dream, it swung open, and he marched forward, leading the others over the threshold. They were standing in a large circular room. Everything in here was black, including the floor and the ceiling. Identical, unmarked, handleless black doors were set at intervals all around the black walls, interspersed with branches of candles, whose flames burned blue, their cool shimmering light reflected in the shining marble floor so that it looked as though there was a dark water underfoot. "Someone shut the door," Harry muttered. He regretted giving this order the moment Neville obeyed it. Without the long chink of light from the torchlit corridor behind them, the place became so dark that for a moment the only thing they could see were the bunches of shivering blue flames on the walls and their ghostly reflections in the floor below. In his dream, Harry had always walked purposefully across this room to the door immediately opposite the entrance and walked on. But there were a dozen doors here. Just as he was gazing ahead at the door opposite him, trying to decide which is the right one, there was a great rumbling noise, and the candles began to move sideways. The circular wall was rotating. Hermione grabbed Harry's arm as though frightened the floor might move too, but it did not. For a few seconds, the blue flame around them blurred to resemble neon lines as the wall sped round and around. Quite as suddenly as it had started, the rumbling stopped, and everything became stationary again. Harry's eyes had blue streaks burned into them. It was all he could see. "What was that about?" whispered Ron fearfully. "I think it was to stop us knowing which door we came in from," said Ginny in a hushed voice. Harry realized at once she was right. He could no sooner have picked the exit from the other doors than located an ant on the jet-black floor. Meanwhile, the door through which they needed to proceed could be any of the dozen surrounding them. "How are we going to get out?" said Neville uncomfortably. "Well, that doesn't matter now," Harry said forcibly, blinking to try and erase the blue lines from his vision, clutching his wand tighter than ever. "We won't need to get out until we find Sirius." "Don't go calling for him, though," Hermione said urgently. but Harry had never needed her advice less. His instinct was to keep as quiet as possible for the time being. "Where do we go, then, Harry?" Ron asked. "I don't..." Harry began. He swallowed. "In the dreams, I went through the door at the end of the corridor from the lifts into a dark room. That's the one. And then I went through another door to a room that kind of glitters." "We should try a few doors," he said hastily. "I'll know the right one when I see it." He marched straight at the door facing him, the others following close behind him, set his left hand against its cool, shining surface, raised his wand, ready to strike the moment it opened, and pushed. It swung open easily. After the darkness of the first room, the lamps hanging low and the golden chains from this ceiling gave the impression that this long, rectangular room was much brighter, though there was no glittering, shimmering lights as Harry had seen in his dream. And this place was quite empty except for a few desks, and in the very middle of the room, an enormous glass tank of deep green water, big enough for all of them to swim in, which contained a number of pearly white objects that were drifting around lazily in the liquid. "What are those things?" whispered Ron. "I don't know," said Harry. "Are they fish?" breathed Ginny. "Aquavirus maggots," cried Luna excitedly. "Dad said the ministry were breeding." "No," said Hermione. She sounded odd. She moved forward to look through the side of the tank. "They're brains." "Brains?" "Yes, I wonder what they're doing with them." Harry joined her at the tank. Sure enough, there could be no mistaking, now that he saw them at close quarters. Glimmering eerily, they drifted in and out of sight at the depths of the green water, looking like slimy cauliflowers. "Let's get out of here," said Harry. "This isn't right. We need to try another door." "There are doors here, too," said Ron, pointing around the walls. Harry's heart sank. How big was this place? "In my dream, I went through that dark room into the second one," he said. "I think we should go back and try from there." So they hurried back into the dark circular room. The ghostly shapes of the brains were now swimming before Harry's eyes, instead of the blue candle flames. "Wait," said Hermione sharply, as Luna made to close the door of the brain room behind them. "Flagrate!" She drew with her wand in midair, and a fiery X appeared on the door. No sooner had the door clicked shut behind them than there was a great rumbling, and once again the wall began to revolve very fast. But now there was a great red-gold blur in amongst the faint blue. When they all became still, the fiery cross still burned, showing them the door they already tried. "Good thinking," said Harry. "Okay, let's try this one." I think we'll stop there. I hope you like that, my sweet kitten Boo. You're such a darling kitten. I love you.